It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I pushed a button. Would you care for our newest arrival from the compounding pharmacy?
No.
It's really good.
From the what pharmacy?
Compounding pharmacy. The Towncrest pharmacy over here is a compounding pharmacy.
What does that mean?
It means they can essentially make their own drugs.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this already.
This is Twiglet's new lifestyle choice.
I didn't know there were... I thought all pharmacies could do that.
See, I didn't know it was a thing. But in the other direction, I just assumed it has to be done in giant faceless factories somewhere. Oh. But so you can see, it's got the graduated markings on it.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, hello, Izzy. So he gets a tenth of a cubic centimeter twice a day in his ears. And the first time we did it, we did what they told us, which was just squeezed it into his ear. And that he did not, like, the rest of the night he was kind of weird. And if you tried to pet his head, like, he'd back away and stuff. It was not good. So the next day, Trish figures out a better idea, and she just squeezes that amount on her finger. Then we, like, rub it on, like, his... Because it's supposed to be absorbed through the skin.
Oh.
So we just sort of rub it on the ear, the pinna, or whatever it is. And that, like, he doesn't... It annoys him, but he's like, eh. And then we put him down, and he's fine, and, you know.
What's...
And we're slowly figuring out, because we have to give him... We do it right before we feed them. And that's useful for us to remember, and also, hopefully, he associates
it
with the food.
What's it for?
He has hyperthyroidism.
Oh. When was he diagnosed with that?
When he went to the vet, which was just a couple weeks ago, I think.
Hmm.
He lost a lot of weight the last year, which I was actually pretty pleased about, and I thought it was because we had stopped feeding him, like, table scraps kind of thing. Because we learned that, like, that amount of food is way bigger for a cat than you think of it. And so I was kind of proud about that, but then... Somehow, Trish got it in her head that I was worried about the weight loss he'd done, which I wasn't, but I'm really glad she thought that, because she mentioned it to the vet, and the vet said, let's test his blood, and it turns out he's got hyperthyroidism.
Mm.
And in addition to losing weight, it just he probably doesn't feel real good and stuff, so this should help with that. So I'm really glad we got confused. Oh, speaking of which, there should be a thing to put on the end of this.
A thing?
Yeah, it kind of looks like this, but it's blue. This is the thing off of an earbud.
It's blue.
But it's blue. Oh, well. This one will be empty soon, and each of them have their own, so... That's a whole box of them right there. Alright, anyway. Hello, everyone. Now that we're over 3 minutes in. There it is. Can you stick it on the
end?
Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat, not Cat, podcast. The only podcast in the world that still holds the Guinness World Record for the biggest misuse of National Weather Service equipment. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 261. Are you sure you wanted to tell people that? I thought
that
was a secret.
It's in the Guinness book. I mean, we're famous for it.
Yeah, but nobody reads that.
Well, that's true, but nobody listens to this podcast either, so...
You're right. What am I always thinking?
I'm always jealous of that podcast called Nobody's Listening. I was like, that was a brilliant idea. Although, to be fair, I knew about that podcast before we started this one, so I don't have a lot of excuse. Here we are again, people. 261. That seems like a really inauspicious number. Like, there's nothing interesting about it. But
not really.
For you 261-year-olds out there, I do apologize. I'm not dissuading... I'm not saying there's anything wrong with your age. In fact, it's impressive. I would get to a hospital and get them to pay you to test stuff.
Yeah.
At 261, I think, yeah, you could just earn money selling off samples of your blood and stuff like that.
Probably.
Or locked in some underground facility somewhere and never to be heard from again.
Well.
It got dark and weird. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, I'd like to say this is us at our worst, but no, this is pretty standard. here's how things work. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like yourselves send emails to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, little questions, little topics.
Very brief.
Yes, ideally. And the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its earlobe servants... I actually looked up words starting with E right before this, and I had to hurry, and that was the best I could find.
Good one.
No, it's not.
I'm trying to be supportive.
Don't patronize me.
I'm trying to be supportive.
We, it's earlobe servants. and Ezzy's E. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the show. Ezzy, what the crap are you doing? Ezzy, what are you doing?
That's right. We just show up and the cards are in the hat.
She's so weird tonight.
We don't have to do anything
she's
at all.
She's doing a lot of exploring tonight. Going places like she doesn't normally go and stuff. It's weird. And just sticking her butthole, like, right up against my face.
That's her favorite part.
It really is. I mean, cats in general are way into showing people their buttholes, but Ezzy is really... Seriously, at this point, I feel like I can hear the ocean. Like, for those of you at home, it's a little bit of visual gag, too, but I feel like you can put it together. I feel like you can put that one together. It's terrible. Terrible ocean. So, how was your week?
Oh, it was good. Let's see. We watched on a disc from Netflix. We watched the series 12 Monkeys.
Oh.
Yeah, watch that.
How is that? Because here's the thing. They said they were making a series, and my first thought was, how do you turn that into a series? My second thought was, I didn't really like the movie, so I don't care. Okay. And then time goes on, and now I'm seeing like trailers for season 2 and stuff, and it looks nothing like what I think of as 12 Monkeys, and looks really kind of interesting.
Well, when I first heard it was a series, I was kind of confused by that, too, because here's the thing.
Each season focuses on one monkey.
Here's the thing. My understanding of the film was that the people who liked it and the reason it was popular and maybe a cult classic, I don't know, has less to do with the actual plot and more to do with how the plot unfolded.
Yeah, maybe.
Like the actual plot of it is not really that interesting. It's kind of in you as the viewer trying to figure out what's going on and questioning the perceptions and the narrative of different people.
Well, and it's based off of a fairly short film.
That's right. Or a story or something. No,
it's based off of a French film called The Jump, or the French, is okay. Jeté or whatever.
Well, I know, I haven't
seen And I've seen that too also. Wasn't that interesting then?
So like you, I wasn't sure how they were going to turn this into a series, because you're not going to be able to keep that kind of thing up. And especially since the film is so well known, it would kind of be a dumb thing to try. Yeah. But if you take the intrigue out of it, which is, again, I think is what made the film popular, then all you have is a plot that's kind of derivative, not very
interesting. And honestly, one of the lamer time travel mechanisms I've encountered.
Sure, so...
It's something akin to butterfly effect time travel, which I also find really stupid.
So what were they going to do? Well, there are two things in the show, and I guess it's also in the film, that attracted my wife to it. Two things she likes. She actually likes time travel stuff and, you know, killer virus stuff. And you've got both of those things in the same thing. So
you got a weird wife there.
So we watched it. And I quickly found out the thing they were going to...
Seriously, who likes killer virus stuff? That's just weird.
Well, it's almost a genre now, you know?
No, it really is.
She likes that
stuff. That's true, and it's a popular genre, so I guess I shouldn't... Clearly, lots of people like it.
But anyhow, so we started watching it, and right away, it was obvious that the showrunners weren't going to try to capture the intrigue or whatever of the initial thing, which I thought, good, because that would just be stupid. And you'd make fools out of yourselves. Mm. But then I had to wonder, now, how is this going to be interesting? Because, of course, right at first, it was not. Mm-hmm. It was exactly as boring as I expected it was going to be. And I realized, no, what they're going to do here, you watch for a couple shows and you figure out the thing they're going to try to hook people with is the time travel aspect. They're going to do tricky things with that.
Okay.
Which, again, is a bold move because, as you and I have often discussed about time travel stuff, it almost never works.
It either patently is screwed up some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's super confusing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I thought, wow, that's a really bold move. We'll see if this works. And I'd say about 80% of the time it does, which is surprising. And that's a lot for me to say because I don't usually like time travel
and
stuff
at all. And the other 20% is time travel puns?
Well, there are a couple times where you get those time travel things where a person says, you know, I can't do that. Why? Well, that's just against the rules. Some arbitrary thing. And you know two shows later they're going to do it.
Yep.
And so part of the 20% is that. Actually, a very, very small percentage. The other 20% is completely taken up by this one thing in the plot. It basically boils down to, you know, the point of the thing, just like the film, and I'm not giving anything away to tell you this because it's right in the first episode, is... You know, there's this big plague that kills 7 billion people. I mean, 7 billion people. That's nearly everybody. And
it's all but like three.
And they have to go back in time to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And about three or four shows in, there's this thing that's revealed when the guy goes back and he has to investigate to find out how to stop this thing. And he gets this piece of information. And this piece of information would suggest a new time and place for him to jump to try to stop this.
Okay.
But that's never even thought of or suggested.
Uh-oh.
Like you as the viewer, you're watching, you're going along, and he discovers this thing happened in this time and place. He knows exactly what time and place it happened because a crime was committed there, and he's looking at a police report that tells you exactly there was a witness that survived the thing, so you know exactly when and where it is, you know what's going to happen, you know who's going to be there, who you would need to either interrogate or kill, and there's like absolutely no talk or even of an attempt to go to that time and place.
This is why it's dangerous to write time travel. somebody that gets in this exact same problem in many places in movies and TV is the Terminator series. It's in general it cobbles together okay, at least until Genesis, and then it's all who the fuck knows. But I've read things that have pointed out there are times where it's like, and so then they're in this time. Wouldn't it have made a lot more sense to go to this time? And I'm like, yeah, it would have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the problem is keeping stuff all straightened out for your elaborate epic is tricky, but it's really bad when it's time travel.
But what makes it worse for this show is that in just about every other instance, they don't do that. They're pretty smart. A lot of the things they do are pretty clever. Some of them you don't even necessarily see coming. They're that good.
Well, and that's what I mean, because you think about that kind of stuff, but nobody's perfect. So clearly this was an oversight.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
And that's the thing. And it's the only one, but it's a big one.
Yeah.
And so therefore you can't stop focusing on it.
All through the whole series, all you can think of is, why are they doing this instead of this? But everything else is done so well. Like you said, it's got to have been just a mistake. But wow, what a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And... But, you know, thankfully, aside from that pretty glaring error, they really thought the whole thing out pretty carefully, and it was good, I thought. I think it's worth seeing if you're into that kind of thing. But and we'll probably keep watching. We also watched the season premiere of Bates Motel, which was excellent.
I still gotta do that.
We really love that show. And we watched the season premiere of Damien.
The what?
Damien. You know, based on the film.
They're making a TV show? What do you mean season premiere?
The series premiere.
Okay, I was like, do we already have a season?
No, sorry.
The Omen as, oh my God.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I'm like, why has no one done that before? And on the other hand, I'm like, I really don't want to see that.
With flashbacks with Gregory Peck and, yeah, the whole thing.
Oh my God. Oh wow.
It's, now my wife was pretty excited about it because she thought this could be really good. Kind of with the same thinking of the whole Bates Motel thing. But I was thinking, yeah, but Bates Motel thing's very different, especially since you're introducing his mom as a character and you can create that character and make an interesting thing going on. What can you possibly do with this except...
Well, because this is over the top of the timeline of the movies instead of really a prequel because Damien's a little kid in the first movie.
I mean. Right, right. And now he's 30 years old.
Oh, so it's a postquel. I guess we call those sequels, don't we?
I don't know if the other
did
movies...
Did he already run for president?
See, I don't think any of that's... I think the only
so
thing...
So he's not Sam Neill?
I think the only thing they're making canon is the first movie.
All right.
And the version with Gregory Peck and I forget everyone else who's in it. I'm sorry. I didn't remember he was in it until they had flashbacks in it and I could see him. Oh, that's Gregory Peck.
Yeah, I
mean, we would have watched the movie first, but we didn't realize they were going to make this TV show. So we just thought, well, we'll give it a try.
I love biblical or Christian, Judeo-Christian mythology stories. I love stuff. Angels, demons,
sure.
God, devil, all that stuff. And in particular, I like Antichrist stories as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And that genre, especially in film, owes a great deal to The Omen.
Mm-hmm.
It is very seminal in that sense. That being said, I don't consider it a particularly good Antichrist story. So, like I said, I'm really surprised nobody's thought to do this before, but I'm also like, I have no interest in a show about that.
Well, unless they can turn it into something interesting.
Well, and the fact that you say he's older, that is interesting because it's that jump from Scary Kid to, you know, Nicholas Carpathia or whatever from the Left Behind books. That in-between stage, it's like when people talk about in the Bible, Jesus is like 8 and then he's 33, and you're like, what happened in between? Same thing here. What happened to the Antichrist during his puberty years, you know?
They actually play on that very thing quite a bit in the show. It's pretty much exactly what you would expect. I mean, if you just sat down and thought, gee, where can they take this? Well, they take it exactly where you expect. As an adult, he's, and by his own perception, and I imagine by the perception of those around him, is just a perfectly normal, average, everyday person, except perhaps even a little better than most people, a little bit heroic even. He's a photojournalist, and he gets into places that are really dangerous to be in, and when the occasion calls for it, you know, he'll, like, save a person from getting run over by a car or beat up.
Is he self-aware of his anti-Christiness?
Well, At the beginning of the show, I think the impression you're supposed to get is that he has blocked out a lot of stuff.
Okay.
By the end of the show, the flashbacks it highlights are things that most children would find traumatic.
Okay.
So even though in the movie they portrayed him as just being this evil child, making these things happen. In the TV show, they sort of suggest that this was actually a traumatic experience for him, and now he's an adult who has sort of blocked a lot of that stuff out.
Okay.
But the show comes in at a time where that stuff, he begins to remember that stuff, and certain things are happening in his life, because he's turning 30, like Jesus did, you know, and that's when Jesus started his ministry, et cetera, and there's all this parallel with that. The pilot's not, it doesn't bowl you over. It's nothing that's gonna, you know, make you think, wow, this is brilliant or whatever. But it could go places. You just don't know. It was a pretty weak pilot, really. But like you said, there are places this could go. Some interesting things could happen with it. I don't know if we're gonna keep watching it or not. But
it's probably a better version of evil than Lucifer.
Well, yeah, we haven't been watching that.
We're like 4 episodes in now. It's still not good. And for the same reasons it was not good in the first place. In some ways, it's almost getting worse. There's a few things. I'm going down with the ship. Like, the show is either going to get better or it's going to get canceled. And I'll be there for either of those.
Okay.
I'm really hoping it becomes like Fringe and like they go on hiatus and when they come back it's totally different and really good. But also based on certain things, it's possible it's about to turn around because two major factors so far. One is they haven't been doing a lot of the supernatural stuff. It's been a lot more the sort of police procedure and the interpersonal stuff, which they are not doing well. It kind of comes off as Castle, but without the chemistry between the characters, which was the only reason to watch Castle. But now they are. They're starting to have some supernatural subplots, and in fact, the trailer for the next episode is all about, like, weird god and devil shit. So that looks good. And then the other thing is we have finally... The two main characters don't have a lot of chemistry, but we've finally... We've come up with a reason why he's going to be with her on her cases now.
Oh.
Whereas we didn't. For the first four episodes, we kept having to basically fumble our way into it over and over again, and she was so annoyed that he kept showing up and shit, and now, like, he's officially a consultant assigned to work with her, so all of that bickering should be done.
So is there... Does this a reason that makes sense, or...?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, as much as
anything like that.
He makes a fucked up devil, so it's a problem. I've said that before. He's a really stupid devil, and I don't like that. Like, he doesn't understand how humans work.
Yeah, you mentioned that, that doesn't make any sense. What I thought, and we hadn't really planned on watching it, but from everything I know about the way Lucifer's portrayed in the books that these are supposed to be based on, you know, this is kind of his retirement, you know, running this nightclub or whatever. But he's perfectly knowledgeable. I mean, as you expect the devil human nature and human everything.
And even if for some reason he wasn't, which again, built into the devil that he would be, he's been there for 5 years.
Yeah.
So a lot of these base concepts of like how to talk to people in ways that don't immediately piss them off and make them leave when, like, your point is you want to actually talk to them. And, you know, I get that he is supernaturally attractive and has powers along those lines, but to never once even passably just engage someone in that, like, it's all just, I mean, it's all the equivalent of, hey, want to fuck? Okay. Like, that's all it ever is. And I'm like, feels weird.
Well, I when I heard that there were
and their mazikeen is terrible.
There was gonna be like a police procedural aspect to it.
I thought
that's a terrible idea. Why would
no?
They
that's
do that?
How you do shows nowadays. And actually, from a business standpoint, it probably improves it because for some reason everybody fucking watches those Murder of the Week shows. Everybody watches them. But yeah, but it's.
But it doesn't make how
and
do
it's
you
a
work
shitty police?
How do you
procedural?
Work the devil into that? And
well,
I, and then it said. When I was reading an article about it, it said, oh, because, you know, he punishes bad people in hell, so it's like he's looking for justice, some kind of equivalence there, and I thought, that sounds stupid.
Well, there's minor spoilers for the pilot. The main reason he gets involved, he's originally a friend of his is murdered, and he's mad about that,
okay.
And he wants to find the... villain or the murderer.
And that's fine.
And that's the pilot. But in the process, the investigating police officer, who's extremely attractive because of course she is, his main devil power is he can get people to admit what they most deeply desire.
Okay.
And it doesn't work on her. And on top of that, all women, specifically women, because what the fuck ever. find him irresistibly attractive also, and she doesn't have that either. And so originally, he wants to find the murderer to punish them, and she's working on the case, and he's fascinated by her because she's immune to his powers. And then in the process, he sort of finds it exciting, and he's still interested in her, and that's part of it. And fairly early on, he's getting sort of introspective. At the start of the series, he's becoming a little introspective because people are pointing out certain inconsistencies in his behavior and things, and so he's starting to be like, what's going on? And so this is all sort of tied together. So in the bit, it makes more sense that he wants to Now, how he goes about it and how shitty their investigations are, still terrible. But the way they do it, it does kind of make sense.
But so it's really, in spite of having this, you know, your main character is the devil.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that just gives you a wealth of stuff to work with. But they're just falling back on the old, I'm fascinated by a woman I can't have trope.
Pretty much, yep.
That's terrible.
Yep.
That is just awful.
Ooh, it gets worse.
One
of the things that initially sparks his interest is he thinks he recognizes her in the pilot. And it comes up about halfway through that in her younger days, she was in a sex comedy in which she got naked and, like, it's a famous cult movie thing. And she's embarrassed about it and tries to forget about it, but he knows her from that, and he's like, oh, God, you were amazing in that. And I'm like, because we needed that subplot.
Yeah, that's worse.
Told you.
Unbelievable.
And just on top of all this, they have absolutely no chemistry together at all.
And on top of all that, you're saying that the sexual attraction that he garners is just from women?
Yes. Now, we are playing around with the idea of bisexuality a little bit, but the show is remarkably heteronormative, which I find especially offensive because it's the goddamn devil.
Yeah, exactly.
He will fuck anything. He's the devil.
Well, yes, I mean, there's just no
he's
reason.
He's all about pleasures of the flesh.
Yeah, there's no reason to be.
Yeah. Now, we have had a few. We had a thing where he had a threesome that involved another man, and then a joke came up of that because somebody came there and was saying something to me like, I can't believe you do that, talking about something else. And his response is, well, why do you think they call it a devil's threesome? Because that is a slang term for that kind of thing. And then recently there was a guy who came to him and he's like, are you here to talk to me or did you want to kiss? And he says it in a way like he might actually be interested. But that's about as much of a bone as we've thrown in that direction.
Yeah.
He is very about the ladies, and apparently all the ladies are about it. So far, thank God, because it might kill the show for me, we have not had any lesbians who find themselves uncontrollably attracted to him.
It's going
to
happen.
If we do that, and that
you know
could be a problem.
Happen. You know it's going to
happen. You know it's going to. Yeah, I do. But I'm holding out.
Well.
So we shall see.
That's too bad, because, I mean, the thing is, I don't know. I mean,
it's a brilliant character. And here's the thing.
Well,
he's a brilliant performer of it. It's the right, like, he has to work with what
it's
the lines
a, it's
are.
A ripe character, really.
I mean, especially
the way it's been handled in the comic books and by Gaiman or whatever, that you've just been handed a whole bunch of stuff.
Right.
The stuff practically writes itself, but that's why you don't just plug tropes in. That's just too bad.
And Mazikeen's just, she's the anti-Mazikeen, and it's pissing me off. We did at least reveal that she does have a fucked up face, but only in reflections.
Oh, I see.
And she also isn't bothered by the fact that in the day-to-day stuff, her face is not fucked up, which was a major character point with Mazikeen, was that something happened in the Lucifer series that made her face normal, and so she was an attractive woman. And she hated that. She thought she was she thought she was incredibly repulsive, and she hated looking that way. So yeah, we don't have any of that. We just because it's not sexy enough. So it all has to be very sexy. But mostly we're not doing that. We're because I'm playing just irresponsible amounts of Fallout 4.
Really?
I'm level 62. I'm about 130, 140 hours in. I have not progressed in the plot in probably 20 or 30 hours.
Mm.
I haven't gone to the Glowing Sea yet. I'll put it that way. That's what we're waiting on.
Really?
The Glowing Sea.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Way the fuck back there. But all three of the female companions are in love with me. I'm back to traveling with Piper.
Okay. Piper Wright, everybody.
Yes. Who I, now that I have that ballistic weave stuff, I just put her back in her original
clothes. Oh, okay, so you did figure that out.
Oh, yeah, real soon. But a lot of my favorite outfits can't
that's true,
do it.
Not all of them can.
So you know what I wore for the longest time? Preacher's vestments.
Oh.
Because they look kind of badass.
Yeah, probably.
But now I'm just wearing the Silver Shroud stuff, like, all the time.
Yeah.
I'm constantly in the Silver
My
Shroud
wife
stuff.
My wife put Curie in Silver Shroud stuff, and that's it. I mean, that's all she wears now.
And Nick idolizes me. And I liked Nick. Nick was fun to play with. But right now I'm back with Piper. I'm doing a lot of railroad stuff. Oh my god, I'm planning the damn sensors for Tinker Tom in every building in the world, always on the top, and you never know how to get there.
So you're doing that, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, I'm all about the railroad. I have like probably like 25 settlements at this point. I haven't hit any at 100% yet. But that's been moving along.
That's tough. Unless they fix some things, that's really hard.
Yeah, no, it is still. But they've announced all the DLC.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's coming out March, April, May.
Wow.
Yes, the one this month is called Automatron, I believe, and it's a thing that will let you build your own robot companions out of parts.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So that's gonna be awesome. And then
that's pretty cool.
The second one, I forget what it's called. But it, which I found hilarious, it expands the settlement building system.
Oh, yeah, that needed to be done.
And I don't even know everything is involved, because the big thing they've been highlighting for reasons I don't understand is that you will now have the ability to have cages in which you can cage, they specifically say, animals and or people.
Hmm.
So there you go. And my only thought is, thank good now the Brahmin won't be wandering into people's houses and shit. And then the third one, I believe, is going to be called Far Harbor. It's actually going to be a story continuation. So,
well, my wife went ahead and decided to advance the plot with the railroad and immediately regretted it. So,
really?
Well, not because anything happened she didn't expect. She just didn't like it. Before she started...
I can't imagine she would have liked either of the others
better. That's right. But, no. I mean, she doesn't like any of the options, but she thought, all right, well, I want to finish the game.
Yeah.
So I have to pick one. So I'll pick the lesser of three evils. But she disliked it so much that now she's back to thinking, I just won't finish the game. I don't really care about finishing it.
Mm.
And I don't... Like, she's thinking about going back and reloading from before she made that decision and just never finishing the game.
At this point, I'm fine with the railroad.
Well, I doubt you.
And I'm already not super happy with the Brotherhood, and I haven't even met the Institute yet.
Well, see, that's just the thing is it was easy to pick the railroad for a variety of reasons, especially not being that filled with
Brotherhood. Because basically, otherwise, you pick between Nazis or other Nazis.
Well, kind of, but there are still things you have to do. The only option is when you pick a faction, you pretty much have to totally destroy the other factions and everybody in them, even if you think there are people who are halfway decent in them, which
I have recently read.
That's no fun.
I have recently read some stuff that seems to imply there is a somewhat mediator related option of, for some of, I don't want to say too much because I feel like we're getting dangerously close to spoiler territory here, but I can tell you afterwards, but I don't actually know. But this is a thing. People have put forth this idea, and I'm not sure I disagree, that a lot of Fallout is about the ambiguity of morality and this idea. And it's that post-apocalyptic thing, like Walking Dead and stuff like that, that sometimes you make the best choice you can. And sometimes, two parts to that, sometimes the best choice you can make is still a shitty choice. And sometimes the best choice you make turns out to have so been not a good choice.
Right, but I mean, I think in the case of the choices you're given, the big choices you're given in this one, the way the choices are set up for you, it seems to sort of break the narrative. Like you can get to a top role or leadership role in something where it would be realistic in the context of the narrative for you to have other options besides just these two.
To have the authority to determine.
Yeah, you would have the authority to do this or that or the other thing instead of just do these two things. What's the point of having part of the narrative be you work your way up the ladder to the top of this organization when once you get to the top of the organization, the decisions you make are the same decisions that your predecessor was given. You can't change it. You can't negotiate it. It just doesn't make any sense that way. But you're right. I mean, all of the games try to put you in situations where there really aren't any good choices, and for you to consider the moral weight of such things. But in this case, there's a lot of narrative work to get you to a place to make a particular kind of choice, where if in any realistic sense you actually achieved that or attained that position, you wouldn't just have those choices. You wouldn't be stuck with the choices that your predecessor basically handed you.
I'm closing my eyes here, and I'm hearing a critique of the end of Mass Effect 3.
Well,
a lot of people said that about that one too.
Maybe that's
and
true.
Unfortunately, I think it's a technical limitation to a degree. I mean, if they're creative enough to come up with specific alternate choices, but to a degree, it's like, I can only give you so many because I have to code what happens after
that's
that.
That's a good point. So then, narrative-wise, don't create a path for a person to get to a position
that would make that self-evident. You can't follow
through. Right, you've got to change the rest of the story. I mean, it's all cool for you to have factions that you can become the leader of. Everybody loves
but
that.
But if you can't actually do anything.
Yeah, but if narrative-wise it doesn't make sense, you just shouldn't
see,
do it.
Do it like in the Elder Scrolls games. You become the head of a guild, usually by saving it or something, and then nothing happens after that. That's how, seriously, in all of them, think about Skyrim, Oblivion, more. You become the head of the guild, and then nothing ever happens with that guild again.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes there's a little side thing where you can send people out on little missions, but, like, there are no options or anything. You just get the big house now, and that's it. Like, do that for us, you know? Now you get the railroad governor's mansion. Because, God damn it, I'm spending a lot of time in Railroad HQ, and that place, I'm pretty sure, was laid out by Tinker Tom, and if not by Tinker Tom, by some other complete fucking lunatic. Do you know how long it takes me every time I'm there to find the workbenches? Oh my God. The place is like the size of my bedroom, and it's so hard to find.
Well, yeah, this is what I'm saying.
Speaking of which, I let Tinker Tom inject me with battery acid.
Oh, you did?
Tinker Tom sells good shit.
Okay.
And so in my mind, I wanted to ingratiate myself to him. it wasn't a good thing, but I don't think it permanently. It didn't fuck me up like mole rat disease. Goddamn mole rat. I didn't discover I had mole rat disease until weeks of in-game time after that was all done.
What's that little icon up there in my?
Yeah, no. Thing? And I looked it up the next day, and it was like, oh, that one dose that I used to save the kid. Not that I wouldn't have saved the kid, but I'm like, I remember at the time thinking, this is a dumb decision. My options are save this child's life, or I'll just keep this antidote in case.
Just to be a jerk.
Just down the road somewhere. Because the game did not exploit, by the way, people, in case you're wondering, that I, in the process of acquiring this, had contracted the goddamn disease myself.
For
life.
If
they had, I would have been like, speaking of which, Kate's personal quest?
Yeah.
Come on. For the rest of my life, when I'm going to explain the concept of ludonarrative dissonance, I'm going to use that quest.
Well, why?
All right, people, it's a little mild spoilers here. Get ready for this. For Kate. Oh, it's not big spoilers, because here's the thing. Kate is a companion that you find in, basically, Thunderdome. and her manager of her fighting career or whatever wants to get rid of her because she's a junkie. He says that straight up in the beginning. She's an addict.
That whole scene's weird.
It's fucking her up, so he wants to get rid of her at least for a while. That's how you get her.
And it doesn't make sense because...
And I've told this many times. There's a rhythm to it.
Okay.
So you get her. She's kind of a pain in the ass, but she likes watching you lockpick, so that's how you make her be your friend. And over time, she's like, huh, you're nice to me and don't ask for stuff back. That kind of freaks me out. And then eventually she's like, I guess you're just kind of nice. And then at a certain point, she gives you her backstory, which is both the most cliched and the most horrific thing ever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I was like, that got, even for Fallout, that got dark. Fast. Because it's like, how much can we cram into one young person's life that's horrible? Like, it was amazing. So then you go on, she likes you better, and she confesses something to you. She confesses that she's an addict. Because apparently...
You didn't know.
she didn't hear when you all three of you were standing right there and he was bitching you out for being an addict. And in fact, she's been doing it behind your back while you're not looking. Which I straight up immediately went in to my inventory. I was like, is she stealing my psycho?
Oh.
Because she's like, I'm addicted to psycho and I've been going behind your back. I'm like, what is behind my back? Is she stealing mine? Because I carry a lot of that stuff. I love my chems. But anyway, she confesses she's addicted. But it's okay, because she found this tell of this experimental vault where they had this machine that could cure you of drug addiction. And so if we go there and the machine still works, we can fix her. Awesome, right? Yes. And she knows where it is. I don't know how she knows where it is, but she does. That happens a lot in Fallout. People just know where shit is. I don't know why. But because it would take forever to hunt her out, I guess. But so you go there. And unfortunately, some really annoying raiders have taken it over as like their hangout. I straight up walked in on them playing ping pong.
Ping pong?
Before I shot them.
No kidding.
Yes.
Huh. We didn't see that.
I've had a few weird things that are glitches in just such a way that it looks like it's on purpose. I'll get back to that. But anyway, you go there. You kill all of these guys. Because that's the only way you get past things. It's just shoot them all.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the machine, and it's a major trust thing, because she has to sit in the machine, and then you have to run it from outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big deal. But you're not an asshole. You do it. She's cured. It's wonderful. She really appreciates it. Da-da-da-da. Sounds like an okay story, right? Well, let me fill you in on some stuff. So in Fallout, drug addiction is not a new concept in Fallout. It's been happening for quite a while. You can get addicted to drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It is not uncommon. I've gotten addicted to drugs like 6 times in this game.
Really?
Yeah, because I use them. But historically, there are ways to cure your addictions. And historically, they're not that difficult. And in this one in particular, they're really not that difficult. You go to any doctor and pay 40 caps, and they cure your addiction.
That's right.
All your addictions. You could be addicted to like 5 things. 40 caps, gone. And what's... Oh, you can make any idiot a doctor. That's a separate thing.
I love that.
This is awesome. I was doing it the other day. I was like, you're the doctor.
I love how they say, yo, there's not very many doctors around. You're not a doctor.
Yes.
There's not very many medical schools. There are no medical schools, so there can't be any doctors.
Also, they're straight up a drug dealer, and they're like, go easy on the chems. I'm like, why are you selling them to me then? But the other thing is, in this game, and this is unique to this game, they have this stuff called Addictol. And you drink it, and all your addictions go away.
That is right.
I carry 3 bottles of it on me at all times. So why the hell, when Kate confesses to me the thing I already knew about her being an addict, did I not say, here, take this 5-hour energy, you'll be fine for the rest of your life?
I don't know.
Or even, why didn't her freaking manager be like, dude, you don't have to take her, just go get me a bottle of Addictol.
Sure.
So, like, it's such an amazingly discordant note. Because I'm like, literally, you built into the game this concept. And not even just this game, in the history of the series, this is built in here. And yet, this is...
I know, we kind of wondered about
it. And you can't even...
Too.
Like, they could have even cheated and had it be some, like, weird exotic drug. But no, it's Psycho. I take Psycho. I've been addicted to Psycho. Just the other day. Fucking Deathclaw. What do I do when I see a Deathclaw? I take basically one of every drug I have and then kill it. And I did that. In the process of doing that, I got addicted to, like, 3 things. So as soon as it was done, I popped my little Addictol and I'm fine. Whatever. In fact, I was fine, and most of the drugs I was addicted to hadn't even worn off yet. It's that easy. Come on. Yeah. We started the next Dresden Files book, which is book 12, which is a big deal book. And you can tell it's a big deal book, because the system for naming the books in Dresden Files is the same for all the books. It's 2 words with the same number of letters. So, storm, front, full moon, grave, peril, things like this. All the way up to the most current ones, which the most current book out is called Skin Game, and the one coming after that is called Peace Talks. And in fact, the collection of short stories is called Side Jobs. All follow this. Except book 12. Book 12's title is Changes.
Mm.
And boy, howdy are there. Well, we are 8% of the way in, and there have already been a couple of major changes.
Mm.
So it's a pretty big deal book. Not for me, I already knew it, but...
He probably published a book with the same title convention, then it got deleted, so he had to...
He's like, crap. No, I think it was very intentional.
This is a tribute novel.
This is not the greatest novel. No, because it's a major, major turning point in the series in a lot of ways.
I see.
And so, yeah. But yeah, not much else going on.
We also watched House of Cards.
Oh, you already tore through
Watched the whole thing. It's pretty good.
Yeah, we're out of that thing. It's pretty
good. It was better than the previous seasons.
But I've been watching a lot, mostly Fallout. A little bit of watching stuff, but not... I mean, we're keeping up on Elementary, mostly, which I still like. Trish has been on a big kick for At Midnight, so we've been watching a lot of At Midnight. And we're almost done with The Soup, in that apparently The Soup was canceled last year.
Oh, yeah.
But we didn't know. We were so far behind, and now we've only got a couple episodes left. So we're like, oh.
Hmm.
Apparently wasn't getting the ratings. Yeah. On E, which...
I hadn't heard.
Yeah, I'm very sad.
I mean, we haven't been watching it or anything, but I mean, I
also, if I was the suspicious type, I'd think Joel McHale was like, I can't do this shit anymore. I need to get a real career. And they were like, well, the show's not going to work without him, so. But I don't know if that's
Snoop's been helmed by several guys.
No, honestly, this is a constant issue people have had. The Soup... on E, has been around for about 11 years. It owes a great deal to a show called Talk Soup that was on a completely different network, but it is not the same show.
Oh, I see.
So people get that a lot. That show, yeah, that had launched a lot of careers. Aisha Tyler was on that. Greg Kinnear hosted that. Hal Sparks hosted that.
Did Craig Kilburn host that?
No. Craig Kilburn hosted The Daily Show originally.
Mm.
When John Stewart was still behind the scenes, but John Stewart was not originally the anchor on The Daily Show. No, but Greg Kinnear, yeah, and Aisha Tyler and Hal Sparks, there might have been some more, I can't remember. But yeah, that was a different show. This one has been around for, I believe, 11 years, and it's always been Joel.
I see.
Which is why I have my theory. Otherwise, yeah, I'd be like, dude, just pick somebody new. See, it looks like an eye.
It does look like an eye. Like an eyeball.
Yes. You guys don't get to know what we're talking about.
Not the letter I.
Yeah, no. I wasn't worried about that. All right, so hat, because we only got like 13 minutes or something. Wow. How did we talk that long about nothing? Oh, wait, that's how the show works. What you got?
Neuroduck. Does a hat wrangler use a lasso to wrangle hats, or is there a modern hat-catching device? Well...
This is awkward.
See, the hat has no legs.
True.
So we don't...
Well, not usually.
We don't really need to chase after it.
Yeah.
You know, wrangle, that's just a word that's used to...
Well, and that's the thing.
To mean bring things to, you know, gather things together,
yeah,
steer things in a particular direction.
We certainly have referred to ourselves before as hat wranglers.
Well, it's in the intro of the show.
No, we're E-related servants.
No, hat wranglers, Tony and William, reach into the awning, you know, at the intro of the show.
Oh, I don't listen to the show, so I don't hear that.
You don't remember that's in the...
Sir Guido? Yeah. the one he did post 100?
I mean, like, yeah. Wrangler... In Hollywood, a such-and-such wrangler is just the person who handles, usually an animal.
That's the thing. It's always something squirmy.
Well, I mean, it's not something you necessarily have to put any kind of rope around or any kind of constraints on. Right? I mean...
You do it like Crocodile Dundee.
In the Hollywood sense, wrangler just means handler. The person who brings the thing, usually, that makes sure it doesn't run off or get killed, that makes sure it gets its cues right, You know, there's spider
wranglers.
Yeah,
I feel like we don't do any of that.
There's spider wranglers. There's wranglers for every living thing that might be in a film that you need. There's a wrangler for it, but it's not just a horse thing or something you need a lariat for.
But the point I'm getting at is I don't know that that's a proper term for us.
For the wrangler?
Yeah, I don't know that we wrangle the hat. I feel more that we are its victims.
I suppose, but that's what Sir Guido calls us in the
but
intro.
But presumably, if one were to wrangle a hat, I don't know that one would need a lot of tools.
No, I don't think so.
Per se. Put out your hand. I mean, opposable thumbs. Mm-hmm. Although not even that, you could just sit on it, presumably, to pin it in place. It would be harder to reach into at that point, or at least more awkward.
It's not a thing you can wear, and I don't just mean because of its supernatural quality, so you wouldn't want to wear it. I mean, if it would allow you to wear it, you would just have cards falling on your head the whole time.
I don't even want to think. I don't. Yeah, I feel like that would not be a good plan for anybody involved. I have a little confession to make. I'm just going to do it on the air, which is odd. So.
This has nothing to do with the question?
No, but it has to do with the questioner.
Oh.
See, I know who Neuroduck is. And I made a little confession to Neuroduck's spouse, who was a friend of mine the other day. Neuroduck's also a friend of mine. So, and I don't know why this didn't occur to me before, but as I told you, I'm back with Piper now.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is there's this, you know, some of it is I feel like her personality works well with the character personality I have created.
Sure.
For my character, but there's also this like my first love kind of thing because she was my first non-dog companion and the first one that we actually achieved, you know, the idolizing and the romance and all that stuff. And I don't know what it was, but she said something a day or two ago that made me realize she doesn't actually sound, which is why it's weird that it was an audio cue, but she looks a hell of a lot like Neuroduck.
Really?
Yes! Mostly they have a similar haircut, but yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's still Bethesda, so I'm like, insofar as Piper looks like a human being,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I realized that, and so I had to confess to her spouse the other day. I was like, just so you know. Because I talked to her spouse a lot about the game, and so they know who Piper is and stuff like that. And I was like, is it weird? And I just realized Piper looks an awful lot like your spouse. I really don't feel like that's a component, but I feel like I should just tell you that. So yeah, Neuroduck, apparently you are my truest post-apocalyptic love. So I guess you got to live with that now. Sorry.
Now hats do blow around like in, you know, they blow off your head and then it's hard to catch them.
And we get some gusts in this house.
Yeah, I wish there was.
The living room gets some serious jet stream.
I wish there were some modern hat-catching devices, because just the old-fashioned way, you just run after it and try to grab it with your hands.
What about those grabbers
and a lasso
that, work, so. Like, old people have to use?
That would be helpful.
Right? I have one of those.
Well, next time the hat's blowing away,
I have it with my socky do and my butt wiping stick.
You still have to get
my surgery.
You still have to get pretty close to it.
Well, it depends on how long it is.
Yeah.
I feel like we could build one. It was really long.
I suppose so.
But then it'd be too long, and you'd have to be like, you have to wait till it blows farther away. Because if it's not telescoping, it's just like, yeah, no. The end of this is like 15 feet past
you,
it.
You can back away a little bit.
You'd be like, and then the wind stops, and you're like, damn it. It's right. Oh, just get up. No. The wind will pick up eventually. Come on. Maybe we can kind of angle it and just sort of sweep it back over here. You go get it.
Yeah. Yep, that would be the problem there.
I've been discovering, this is where I get really immodest, because I want to talk about what I have recently perceived of as a strength of mine.
Why is that immodest?
Because I'm kind of going to be bragging about myself a little bit. It just feels weird.
Talking about things you're good at is bragging?
I don't know. I feel self-conscious saying, I'm really good at such and such.
Really?
I don't know why, see.
That surprises
me. And some of it may end up being the content involved here. But
okay.
We'll see. Because it's not like I'm going to say I'm really good at Donkey Kong. And it's not something demonstrable or quantifiable. The way I've been phrasing it lately is I may be way more creative than I realized.
Okay.
And not that I suddenly have found, like, untapped levels of creativity, but I've just suddenly started to realize that stuff that to me is just sort of normal, coming up with stuff spontaneously, is not something everybody can do. But it's a problem. And you know about this better than anybody, even probably better than Trish.
I know about what?
I come up with ideas.
Yeah.
I come up with really creative ideas.
Sure.
I can do it on the spur of the moment really pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
I have no follow through whatsoever.
Okay.
Well, so I'm trying to figure out how I can harness this for a purpose. I need like a little army of doers,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just sit there and come up with crazy fucking ideas.
Yeah, that doesn't
I need
happen.
A wrangler.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. But, sorry.
Trish was credited as a Tony Wrangler in our film.
I feel like that was accurate that time, because I was...
And no lasso was employed in that I
was
that
on
I know of.
A lot of chems, and there was no Adderall.
No, but...
I shouldn't even joke about that, because I legit got addicted to Percocet during that time.
But,
I'm better now.
So you're coming to a realization of the potential power of your own creativity.
Yes.
And you're thinking, gosh, it seems like a waste to not do anything about that. And your solution is to have minions to do those things for you?
Well, this is the thing. I'm starting to ask the question, how do I harness this creativity without doing any more work?
Right. So you think... having other people do
that was the first thing that came out. If you have other ideas, that's fine. Because
I have lots of other ideas, but they're nothing.
No,
they don't equal.
That's what I'm saying. That's a fit. Harness the creativity, not do more work.
Okay, but
because I've discovered that apparently this ability I have is more valuable and rare than I thought. Okay, but I still don't want to do anything.
But see, here's the problem with your reasoning is that even if there were a whole bunch of people who were willing to do those things for you, you would end up still having to do things. Because managing those people and communicating to those people and following up with those people, all that stuff becomes a job.
No, I just want it to... I need a lot of hungry creators.
No, it doesn't work
and
like that.
And I'll be like, here.
No, it doesn't work.
There's got to be people out there who are willing to just like write or film and shit like that, but are really bad about coming up with ideas, right?
See, the funny thing about that is, you'd think that's true. Actually, it is true. It is true. There are people out there who...
really want to make films, but can't figure out what to make a film about.
There are people who are really good, they're skilled at certain things.
Yes.
But coming up with ideas, maybe they're not so good. There are people like that. The problem is that a lot of them don't realize they're not good at it. I've run into a lot of people who...
That's most of the movies I watch on...
Exactly. I've run into a lot of people...
Except most of them are not technically skilled.
Like, I might meet a person who I've seen their work, and I think that person would be a great director of photography. Great director of photography. But this person seems to insist on making all of their own films, and they're not good at anything else. They're not good at editing. They're not good at directing. They're not good at writing. They're not good at acting. But they think because they are good at this, that they're a filmmaker and not just a DP, mm-hmm. right? Or a person who can write a respectable script, but they can't direct. Their shots are all crap. They can't act. If you're a storyteller like me or you can hear the words coming out of people's mouths and you can think, that script might work if anyone else was doing it, but this person thinks because they can write something, a good script, that they must be good at everything else.
And you'll see that a lot of people are like, oh, it was a great story idea, or like one thing about it was good, but everything else was
But then they themselves can't see the things that are bad.
And I freely admit I'm bad at everything else in that I have no interest in doing anything.
Well, but my point is, it's a kind of self-blindness that sort of feeds upon itself. You're good at this one thing. You think you're a good filmmaker in general. You make a film. It's terrible. But but the cinematography is probably good. So that's all you see. So you think it was
you
great.
You think it's fine, yeah.
And everybody who criticizes it just doesn't know what they're talking about. And here, it's a sad waste. Because if you could just come to terms with the fact that you're terrible at everything except being a cinematographer, you could maybe work on a project worthy of your skills and talents that everybody, including you, could be proud of. But these people who have these skills, sometimes they get so myopic about it that they just go out and do their own thing, and they wonder, how come nobody wants to help me with these projects? Well, because you take over everything. You don't let anyone else do anything, and it always turns out terrible, and they can't figure it out. So, yes, the answer to your question, yes, these people do exist.
But they won't use me.
No. Because they think
they're fine.
Yeah, they think their ideas are great.
Well, here's for all you people who can't come up with an idea. I literally came up with this out of whole cloth while you were talking rather than listen to you. So, it's called Zomberries. In 1943, in the midst of World War II, zombies had a special division working on wartime botany. And the only even remote success was a strain of strawberries they invented that, when ingested, completely deprived the eater of their own will. And they were highly susceptible to influence. And so they're going to use this. But by the time they'd gotten that going, the war was over and they were out of luck. Cut to present day in Argentina, because they're always in Argentina, an older man of German descent has a nice little garden he cultivates out there, and the children come and steal his strawberries. And then it's a zombie movie after that.
It's just a zombie movie.
Pretty much. I don't know.
But they're not undead zombies.
No. They're zomberries.
They're like real zombies, like the original... I'm being controlled by someone else.
Selling chicory coffee.
Does the old man who grew the zomberries, does he control the children, or they're just...
Well, he does, other people do, because most people don't realize what's going on, and so there's a lot of, you know, attempting to stop people. And you get slips of the tongue, you know, like the old I wish and the genie makes something terrible happen. You get that kind of shit, telling people to jump in a lake and things like that.
Sounds like a good idea.
And the only person who can save them is Mano. Because Mano has a terrible allergy to strawberries. So I give that to the world. Somebody can make that. And don't even have to credit me. It's fine. Go ahead. It's not even Creative Commons. Like public domain. Go nuts. Or berries. Or over time. Let's get this finished.
Okay.
I gotta go eat some strawberries. Keep listening. I don't know. Craig, sweetheart Craig, from the UK, tweeted something about... I forget who... Maybe it was Happy Jacks was the other one. But something where he was just... He was going on a trip, or he was coming... Something where he was going to be stuck for several hours. And he was like... So... Well, he used my Twitter handle, but I'm sure he meant us. And Happy Jacks would keep him company during that time. And I was like, oh,
that's nice.
That was sweet. So we love you too, Craig. I hope you don't still have to live in Slough. So anyway, everybody listen to us, because otherwise we feel really silly. And if somebody makes Zomberries in any form, graphic novel, interpretive dance, whatever, let me know. I want to see it. And like us on Facebook, and eat more meat, and don't vote for Donald Trump.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com.